Welcome to the Better World of Work podcast by Talent. I'm your host, Ian Tyler, Talent's Group Chief Strategy Officer. And today I'm very excited to be joined by Andrew Barnes to be talking all things 4-day work week. But before I kind of go into any elaborate overview as to exactly what that means, Andrew, good morning. I'd love you to introduce what the 4-day work week is all about. Welcome. Oh,
thanks, Ian. Good to be here. Well, the 4-day work week, in reality, it's a little bit of clickbait. What this is about is reduced hours working without adversely impacting productivity. So what we talk about is the concept of the 180-100 rule, which is 100% pay, 80% time, provided we get 100% productivity. Mm. Now, in some companies, that equates to a 4-day week. But in some other businesses, it might be, say, taking a couple of afternoons off a week, or maybe even, you know, compressed hours. But what we're trying to do is reduce the amount of time that we work, but obviously not at the cost of output.
Mm. So tell me, I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are massive supporters, as I'm fully aware, all around the world, and there'll be naysayers. But how did you actually give birth to this overarching concept of what the movement's all about, and why did you do what you did a number of years ago that's kind of led into what it is to, and obviously what we know as the 4-day work week movement today? What was the trigger?
Well, again, I'm a very accidental evangelist for this, in that I was trying to deal with a totally different question. As any businessman, you know, does, I was trying to work out how I could improve productivity in my company. And I was sitting on a long-distance flight to London, and I was reading some back copies of The Economist, which is what I used to do. And in The Economist was a couple of articles about the fact that people were only productive for 2.5 to 3 hours a day. Mm. And I wondered, first of all, why? And secondly, was that happening in my company? And I thought the why was quite interesting. It was talking about things like, you know, interruptions at work. It was talking about people being distracted, attending, you know, too many meetings. And I started to think, well, I thought, well, actually, that is happening in my company. So then I wondered, was there a deal to be done here? Could I go to my team and say, look, what would you do differently so that we could deliver the same productivity? What would you do differently if I gifted you a day off a week? And it was simple as that. I wasn't trying to, you know, create a better world. I wasn't thinking about work-life balance. I was trying to work out a way to incent my staff to improve their productivity. So I'm slightly embarrassed to admit that, actually.
Happy consequences, huh? Happy consequences. What is it? There's a saying that innovation at its core is just finding new ways of solving old problems, right?
Well, absolutely, yes.
And if you go back to, I remember in a previous conversation with you when you were talking about this whole 5-day working week construct, was born out of obviously a golden era in the Industrial Revolution. So, you know, it's an interesting story, that one. Do you want to kind of share that with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, the Henry Ford is credited with the 5-day work week. And when you actually scratch the surface of why Henry Ford did it, actually he wanted to create a market for his cars. And he'd worked out that, you know, if you were working 6 days a week, you know, on the seventh day you went to church, and that wasn't really a need to use a car. So if you gave an extra day off, then there was a bit of free time. And once you had free time, then you might think, well, we might go to the beach, or we might go to town. And for that, if you're going to take the family, you needed a car. So in many ways, what Henry Ford was doing was no different from me. I mean, I was trying to improve productivity. He was trying to make a market And he worked out that working 5 days would make a market. So that has, I think, very interesting connotations for what we do today, because if we did the same thing in an era of service industries, reduce the amount of time that we work, there is every chance, and indeed a lot of the evidence does suggest, that there's every chance we'd actually increase economic activity, because you get your business bit done in 4 days, and then in that extra day off, you'd go and do other things, and that would obviously, you know, drive other businesses. So I think the concept is sort of the same. As you say, there's nothing new under the sun, is there?
Well, this is true. This is true. I do feel, though, that the way that the ideation, your own self-experiment at an organizational level when you first introduced this into your business to where it is today, you know, and this kind of whole concept of the oh shit moment, the kind of pinch yourself moment, the actually we're onto something here. Was there ever a moment, has there been, or do you think there might be a time where you can actually sit there and go, wow, I did not expect this to be where it is today?
Well, look, to be honest, I think there were a couple of moments. The first one was very, very early on in the piece, and that was when we announced that this is what we were going to do. And we got absolutely deluged by international media. And deluge is the right word. Right. We stopped counting at about 12,000 articles. And that covers, you know, print, radio, television. And when we announced the results of our trial, and then we announced we were going public, it did it again, only bigger. And we could watch this go round the world. You would have it, different media stations would pick up the story, and then it would be picked up in another time zone. And that, you know, that was quietly extraordinary. I mean, you never expected. I always say, you know, you've made it when you're on drive time Colombian radio, right? There's a component, but the true pinch me moment was my partner Charlotte and I were driving the Peking to Paris car rally, and we were in Siberia, and the phone rang in the car, and our guys in New Zealand said, do you realize you've just been name-checked by the Prime Minister of Russia, who said that he's seen the four-day week and he thinks that Perpetual Guardian's experiment is the future for Russia? And we thought, well, wow, that's you know, pretty cool. Put the phone down. The phone rings again, and they said, where are you? And we said, well, we're in Siberia, and we're heading to Novosibirsk, this town in, you know, far east Siberia. Phone goes down again. Then they pick the phone, comes back up again. They said, look, there's going to be camera crews from Moscow Television in Novosibirsk waiting to interview you. We were late. We got stuck. I was covered in oil. I did three back-to-back TV interviews for Moscow Television. And we thought, well, that's a big thing. But then as we left Russia 2 weeks later, they announced that the parliament was starting to draft legislation.
Yeah, it's now incredible.
Yeah. There have been many pinch me moments since, but you know that one was the first time, I think, that was back in 2019. That was the first one at which we thought, hang on, actually, this is bigger than what we started. We thought we were going to get one article in the New Zealand Herald, and maybe a clip on you know our morning TV, and that's no big deal. That's about 40,000 viewers. That's what we thought we were going to get, but suddenly this thing was global, and it wasn't just global. It was starting to change lives and change attitudes, and we thought that was the point at which you sit back and you go, you know, you don't get many chances to change the world.
No, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, I want to kind of dig into that a little bit later on. But for listeners out there that have kind of teetered around the edge of wanting to do a trial, give it a go, understand what it all means, how do you get ready, who do you need to kind of cajole or influence internally? Like, tell us a little bit about how an organization would start something like this.
Well, look, the world has changed enormously, I think, from where we were 4 years ago. What we did right at the beginning is that we decided that we were going to share everything that we had ever done. We put all our material up on websites. It was one of those great fluky things right at the start that we actually also had research run alongside our trial. So we weren't just, producing an opinion. We had objective research that showed what had actually happened in the
Yeah,
company.
validates.
And so we created this organization called 4-Day Week Global. And again, a very accidental exercise in that we started getting thousands of companies phoning us up and saying, "How did you do this?" So that led to the organization, the book. But what we then decided was that, it's a very lonely step for senior executives to make the decision to actually implement some sort of 4-Day Week. So what we created was a series of pilot programs, and we've run these now in Ireland, the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, UK, South Africa. We've got them coming up in Portugal and Spain.
Right.
And the idea around them is that we bring together a whole group of companies who think that they want to try a 4-Day Week. What we then do is we brief them on all the lessons that we've learned. We bring in mentors, we bring in some specialists. We buddy each company up with a company that's done it before. And what we try and do is we try and make it, safe for an organization to experiment. Now, alongside that, we bring in our global research team. So we are running a global research program coordinated out of Boston College in Massachusetts, got Oxford and Cambridge universities from the UK involved, as well as in
Wow.
each country, we have a local university that would partner and provide the local
Yeah.
research. So what that means is you now can, A, justify to your stakeholders that this isn't a crazy idea. It's a very structured experiment. There are going to be lots of objective bits of data that you can share that show what the impact on the company is. But also now, of course, you can point to the thousands of companies around the world that have already implemented a 4-Day Week and what their experience has been. It's not, these mad Kiwis in 2018 going, "I know, let's just work 4 days a week." Which, we were right up there with hobbits at that point. If you get what I mean, so I mean, this is now far more than that. This is very structured. And I think I would like to say this is now a very sensible, rational business argument because the evidence suggests that productivity doesn't remain flat, that productivity actually goes up between, 15 to 20, 30%, depending on circumstances.
Yeah. Well, and do you think the naysayer or the roadblocks that do typically come up are ones that are relatively straightforward based on the fact that you've got evidence and research backed insights and that kind of network, if you will, that kind of movement that wraps around it that gives it such a stronger sense of validation that fear of change can really heavily influence a bit of an old school mentality around this is just an opportunity for people to work less.
I'd like to say yes, but I'm going to say no. And I think the reason for that is that the naysayer, the most regular statement is, "Well, it might work in X, but it wouldn't work in my business because." That's based on pretty deep-rooted prejudices. We have been conditioned, I think, as a leadership generation, in fact, a few generations, that working longer is working harder. And to change that requires quite a leap of faith, especially if you've spent, you know, God knows how many years following that orthodoxy. So, you know, I can understand why it is very difficult for some business leaders to change that. And the other thing, of course, is that there is the what's in it for me issue. That, let's be clear, it's pretty good as it is at the moment. Why would I run the risk of making my people work less and then finding that it doesn't work? And I'm going to be, you know, on the receiving end of that. So this is very much something, what's why making it safe has to be such an important part of the whole thing.
Is there a couple of things that you could talk to that you know what the success of the movement might be? I'm aware, obviously, from some of our background research that a number of governments around the world are really looking at this in terms of introducing into public sector and things. Are there those types of trials that are happening overseas that you could talk to that may offer some kind of insights?
Well, first of all, the first trial, the sort of the private enterprise trials are the ones that we're running around the world. The largest of these, obviously, is the UK trial with over 70 companies in it. Now, the formal results from those trials have not yet come out, but there was data that came out from the halfway point in the UK trial. And that we can share at this point in time. Now, that had something like, you know, 49-50% of the participants were saying that productivity had actually gone up. The majority, I mean, the absolute majority of participants had, you know, productivity flat to up. I mean, we're talking in the 90s. But what's very interesting is that all, again, the majority, vast majority, were all saying that they were seeing benefits as far as their business was concerned, and the vast majority at the halfway point were signaling that they were going to keep it. Now, so that's good evidence from a fairly wide-ranging trial. There are lots and lots of other individual organizations that have done this and that have announced the results themselves. So they've been operating, you know, on their own. I think one of the most high profile recently was Atom Bank in the UK, which, you know, experimented with it, probably the first financial institution in the UK to try it, and has come out unequivocally saying that they not only are retaining it, but just how successful it actually has been. And that has, they're very, very strong advocates for this. So I am not aware, really, other than I think there's one or two that that we've come across. The majority, the vast majority of organizations that have attempted to do this have seen better results and are sticking with it. What's now happening is there's a bit of a shift that I think has occurred over the last 2 to 3 years, and partly driven by the pandemic, because in some ways the pandemic removed two of the barriers. One was, can I trust my staff? Well, if you're not in the office, you had to trust them. And secondly, how do I measure productivity? And if they're not in the office and you were using time as a surrogate, you had to find a different way to do that. But now you've got this whole great resignation issue. And now when we're talking, especially in companies in the United States, they are saying that the primary reason they are looking at a four-day week is now about the attraction and retention of staff.
Interesting.
And and then what you're seeing now is this is where countries are starting to get involved, because it's no longer just about me trying to get people into my company. It's how do I get people into my country?
Yes. Yeah.
So suddenly, this is where, you know, I think Lithuania, Romania, Belgium have in the Europe, for example, have all passed some sort of legislation. You're seeing some legislations trying to reduce the working week passed in Japan. India has passed some legislation around 4-day week legislation, not reduced hours yet, but reduced days. You're starting to see this pick up. You've got, you know, legislation has been put forward in the United States. There's a private members bill coming up in the UK. It was in, I think, the Labour manifesto last time round, but it's coming in all over the place of suddenly politicians starting to go, you know what? And the latest, of course, of these is the state of Victoria in Australia with, you know, Premier Andrews sitting there saying, well, if he gets re-elected, you know, he will look to bring in a 4-day week. And I think that's unashamedly being brought in to try and attract workers to Victoria at the expense of every other state. Now, you know, we'll see if it happens, but I think that's where this is going now.
Well, and I mean, that's a really nice lead on to kind of where my mind was going. It's, you know, we've spoken about the accidental movement that you've created that's changing governments and workplaces and communities and just individuals' lives. We've kind of touched on the pinch yourself, holy shit moments. We've spoken about what is becoming essentially a democratization and a broader acceptance of a four-day week. What's next? Like, have you actually, rather than it being a happy consequence of just keep doing what you're doing, have you actually now taken a step back and said, actually, this thing, let's put it on steroids. We expect it to be X in, you know, Y time. Have you created a bit of a longer term, broader vision for this now?
Well, the problem with that is every time you have a longer-term, broader vision, it gets overtaken by events. I mean, you know,
podcasts.
Podcasts. I mean, I would, you know, when somebody asked me this right at the start, and I said, well, maybe in 10 years we'll see it becoming a bit more mainstream. And now here we are, what, 4 years, one pandemic later. It's not necessarily mainstream as in practice, but it's mainstream as regards debate. You know, it's been debated at the World Economic Forum. It's been debated at the European Economic Forum. There are very clearly now, you know, government after government sitting how they're going to rethink this. So if I came up with a forecast or a view on steroids, I no doubt I'm under cooking where this will actually go. I mean, seriously, we've got, you know, Congressman Takano has put a bill into Congress reducing the American work week. Now, nowhere in my long-term plan would I have ever expected the Americans would be thinking about possibly putting a reduced work week. We've now got 10 staff working in 4-day week global around the world. We've got all of these pilot programs going. To be clear, though, you know, we fund what we do ourselves or out of, you know, very, very small fees that we charge companies to come on the program so we can cover our costs. If I was to supercharge this, I will have to rethink how we do that. I mean, we're talented amateurs, I think, is probably the best description. Because this, you know, if we were McKinsey or we were Deloitte or we were EY, there would be piles of resources behind this, and there sort of isn't. There is Charlotte and I, and a, you know, a very small but very talented team of people, who I guess, I mean, we're the Rebel Alliance, right? That's probably the best way to look at it. You know, out there is the imperial stormtroopers arguing like hell that they're going to keep on with a 5-day week, and we're sort of with those little dodgy looking Millennium Falcon thing whipping around the universe, sniping away at the edges. Now, at some point, and I think very soon, this will actually explode, because I think you used the word, it's the democratization of this. And what is now happening is that groups of people in different countries, and the latest that's come on this journey with us is a team from South Africa, who are saying, actually, we want to be part of this. We want to change our country for the better. And so that, I think, is the point where this goes on steroids. That's when, you know, groups of people in different countries come together, use the concept, the material that we've done and the idea, but actually structure it for their own country. And I think that's where this explodes, because we know that 80% of employees, wherever they are in the world, when asked, say that they would like to work a 4-day week. And that's a very strong pull factor. So what we've got to do now is provide, you know, like the touch paper, we're mixing metaphors, but like that touch paper in each country. And, you know, sooner rather than later, I think this shift will occur. It, you know, it didn't take long for Henry Ford's idea to be picked up and translated around the world. I mean, maybe it took a decade and a bit, but you know, that's not bad.
That's not
in
bad.
In terms of changing the world.
Well, for something that's been an accidental happy consequence, to now we're having this conversation on the 1st of November 2022, talking about changing countries' governance, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's almost 4 years to the day, in fact, about it. I think we initiated the program permanently in the company on the 1st of November, 2018. So there you go. I mean, it's...
Happy anniversary.
it's extraordinary, right? So you're right. We are seeing something, but I think, let's be clear, we haven't changed the way we have worked for 100 years. We have hung on to this construct of the 40-hour week with, you know, significant demographic changes. You know, families have to have both parents working. They didn't, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
We have to rebalance how we do things. And we know that productivity, you know, has increased materially in, you know, recent decades. And the benefits of that have generally gone to corporates as opposed to individuals. So one of the things here is about readdressing the balance, but recognizing that everybody has to win for this. You know, there is no free lunch. You can't just drive down productivity and give people more free time. You know, that isn't going to work, because as a consequence, the organization will look to rebalance its staffing. Whereas what we want to do is we want to say, look, this is about, you know, giving people the time to be the best they can be at work, but the best they can be at home. And if you get that right, you know, who'd have thought healthier, happier, more engaged, more rested employees are more productive? I mean, that's a crazy idea, isn't it?
Oh, goodness me. I mean, who'd have thunk it? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So drop the mic moment.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a really nice kind of way just to kind of draw our conversation into somewhat of a close, although As we've discovered before, you and I could talk for quite some time. I'm always fascinated when I have a discussion with you. But at Talent, we have a vision, which is empowering people to build a better world of work for all. That real inclusive for all component is really important. Given what you're doing and what your organization is doing, what does a better world of work look like to you?
Well, now you see, that is very dangerous because we could go on for hours on this too. Look, I am, I unashamedly hate gig. Mm. I hate it. I hate it because I think that all too often these type of contracts are introduced to arbitrage things that we as society have generally said are unalienable rights, you know, for sick pay, holiday pay, minimum wage, to invest in our people, to equip them to be, you know, better employees, but better citizens. And I think when you look at things like gig, that doesn't happen. In fact, usually you end up with those rights either not there or just ignored. Now, why that's relevant is because, funnily enough, the four-day week for me is about trying to deliver the flexibility that gig promised, work when you want, with the benefits of structured employment, where those basic rights are delivered, but at the same time, there is that prospect, you know, for growth.
Yeah.
I don't like this idea that convenience trumps everything else, that, you know, that I just need to get it cheaper.
Yeah.
And I think we have a world where we want two things. We seem to want cheaper and we seem to want more.
Mm.
And I don't want cheaper or more. I want better.
Yes. Yes.
And that's where this for me goes. Mm. I want a world where people have got the time to spend with their families, to have those, you know, share the care responsibilities. I want an employment world where people don't get prejudiced by spending time with their families, or whether they're male or female, but that doesn't stop you, you know, climbing the ladder. Do we always have to have the people at the very top be the people who've sacrificed absolutely everything to get there? And consequently, their view of the world is often quite skewed, I think. Mm-hmm. And I don't care whether you're a corporate leader or a politician, it ends up with exactly the same thing. So what I would like to have, if you will, that this is the revenge of the common man and woman, that this is the opportunity for real people to have great careers, meaningful careers, but at the same time, meaningful lives.
Mm.
And if we could do that, you know, that is a legacy that I would love to be known for, that,
yeah,
more than anything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful. I mean, and what a legacy it would be. 100%. 100%. I am going to say thank you very, very much, Andrew Barnes. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. As always, for those people that want to learn more, understand more about what it is that you're doing, where can we direct people so as they can come and check it out and learn a little bit more for our listener base? Where would they come to, Andrew?
Well, three places. Go to the website, www.fourdayweek.com. Piles of stuff on there. There's also just been released a LinkedIn learning course, which talks you through how to structure a pilot. And if you're really, you know, glutton for punishment, you can buy the book, or real glutton for punishment, listen to it on Audible. And I did the recording, so then I can drone at you for hours. And that's probably the best way to go.
That's excellent. That's excellent. There's no droning at all. It's just utter fascination and education. And I always walk away kind of wanting more and learning something. So, Andrew, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for joining us today on our Better World of Work podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks very much.